Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
My understanding is that she was last seen at Walmart. Her car was found at Albertson's parking lot, which wasn't there when she went missing. And it had been just parked there and left. So I was told that she was going to meet with a friend that night and never showed up.
45-year-old Leona Kinsey disappeared from La Grande, Oregon on October 25th, 1999. Leona was last spotted by a friend at a local Walmart. And according to that friend, Leona said she was going to meet someone at a nearby Albertsons grocery store. After that, she planned to stop by her friend's house around 7 p.m. Leona never showed up at her friend's house and was never seen or heard from again. In part one, we discuss the circumstances surrounding Leona's disappearance and how those close to her began pointing fingers at each other. In the beginning, investigators had many people to look at. But as time went on, they began to focus in on one man. The more that they learned about this man, they began to believe that he might just be the one who made Leona disappear. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 275 of The Vanished, part two of Leona Kinsey's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. When Leona Kinsey first disappeared, many people suspected Leona's on-again, off-again boyfriend, Lonnie. And some people still do to this very day. However, from the very beginning, there was also another name floating around, John. On the day that Leona disappeared, she had told her friend Nancy that she was going to meet a man at the local Albertsons grocery store. But she only told Nancy this man's nickname, Mexican John. But Nancy didn't seem to know much more about this guy beyond his nickname. Investigators later learned that John went by John or Juan Peña Lamas. One of Leona's friends told investigators that John had lived on Leona's property for some period of time in the past, and that he was a major methamphetamine supplier in the local area. This friend hadn't seen John in the La Grande area since Leona disappeared, but recalled Leona saying that John had thrown a tantrum because she refused to sleep with him and trashed her house during his tantrum. Leona's friend Nancy also remembered John staying on Leona's property a while back. And she too was aware that he was a big methamphetamine supplier. Nancy told investigators that she was under the impression that he was connected to the Mexican mafia, which made locals intimidated of John and his connections. It seemed as though those close to Leona all knew bits and pieces of information about John, and that helped investigators piece things together. Lonnie said that John was Leona's methamphetamine supplier, and that they would meet at the Albertsons grocery store to do their transactions, the same store where Leona's vehicle was found after her disappearance, and also the same store she told Nancy that she was planning to meet someone the night she went missing. After Leona's disappearance, everyone stopped seeing John around town, and it wouldn't be until 2001 that the police caught up to him. It was at this time that he was arrested on unrelated charges. John told the detective that he had lived with Leona for a period of about 3 months, but that he had moved out the February prior to her October disappearance. He said that he lived there along with his girlfriend and believed that they had left on good terms with Leona. John also mentioned the man that Leona had a conflict with over a car, which we had discussed in part one. After speaking to John, they tracked down his ex-girlfriend who had been living with him at Leona's. She confirmed that this was, in fact, true. She also went on to say that she didn't realize what type of man John was when she met him. She described him as a very good con man. She asked him why he was so secretive, and he eventually admitted that he was a drug dealer. He had also stolen credit cards from her friends and used them. While John was initially a gentle man when their relationship began, it quickly escalated to violence. During the course of their relationship, John had broken her nose and held a gun to her head. This woman was still dating John at the time of Leona's disappearance, and she explained that she found out about Leona being missing during a trip to La Grande with John. She had a gut feeling that he was involved. John made statements like he wouldn't mind killing someone who owed him money, even if it was a woman. John's ex recalled that Leona always had trouble coming up with money to pay him, and she described Leona as very passive about it, which John took advantage of. When John and his girlfriend moved out of Leona's home, they moved several hours away, but she said that he was still frequently traveling back to La Grande to sell drugs to Leona. She confirmed that they would meet at the local Albertsons or a nearby car wash. Every now and then, she had asked John about Leona, and his responses always seemed odd to her. He said things like, "No one will ever find her." There were times when she asked if Leona had been found, and he said nope in a pompous way, as if he knew where she was. He seemed so confident that no one would ever find Leona that it left his ex-girlfriend feeling uneasy. John told her about a lake that Leona used to visit. He said that if someone wanted to get rid of Leona, they could have killed her and dumped her body at or near this lake, and she wouldn't be found for years. She couldn't remember the name of the lake, but told the investigator that she would try to remember it and get back to them if she did. After speaking to his ex-girlfriend, investigators went back to John and asked him when he last saw Leona, and he said that it was months prior, when he moved away from La Grande in February. The investigator informed John that they had heard from several sources that he was selling drugs to Leona in the lead-up to her disappearance, and John acted shocked by this information. He said this wasn't true and he wasn't involved with drugs or Leona's disappearance in any way. They told John that they weren't interested in his drug activity. They were just trying to find Leona, but he stuck to his story and denied being a drug dealer or ever seeing Leona after he moved away in February. By this point in time, John was no longer incarcerated. He agreed to take a polygraph and set up a day and time, but never showed up. In 2003, another person came forward with information. He told the police that John had been at his house and said that he had put a hit on Leona and that there was no way she would ever be found. He allegedly said that he had Leona killed because she was going to rat on him. This person was under the impression that John had ties to the Mexican mafia in the Salem, Oregon area and that they were the ones who had killed Leona. We don't know if Leona was working as an informant or planned to, but there has always been whispers about this. Family friend Crystal told us more.
I believe it was Carolyn that heard from a friend of Leona's that the cops pulled Leona in and asked her to be an informant. She told them no, she left, and she was missing. And that is the entire wrap-up of basically that day or that 2 days or whatever that was. From the time they questioned her and asked her to the time she probably told Lonnie to her going missing. In my opinion, clearly he's a person. They know who he is. I'd never heard of him in town, nor had ever seen him. But all I hear is bad stuff about him, how he abused his women and whatever.
Leona's friend Nancy had told Carolyn that Leona said she was going to meet this man, John, and Carolyn was left wondering who this man was. While the police seemed to be focusing in on John, they weren't telling Carolyn much about what they had uncovered. Years after Leona disappeared, Carolyn got a frightening lead about a man named John.
There was a woman who called me in like 2007, and she said that her husband passed away. She put an ad in the paper to hire a ranch hand, and this guy called on the ad, and he had ranching experience, and he was charming, and she hired him. After a couple of months of being her ranch hand and befriending her and the family, she found out that he had raped her granddaughter and got her pregnant. And when her granddaughter threatened something, he beat the shit out of her and she had a miscarriage. And so now grandma finds out that this just happened to her granddaughter. And so she goes to fire him. He started threatening her. And I guess he hung around her. She was afraid to like fully let him go for quite a while. But he would threaten her, "I'll do you like I did Leona." And he drove her past my mom's house and he took her to a place out in the woods and said, "You know, you could get rid of a body down there." They never found Leona. She said she never knew Leona and she didn't know what he meant, but she knew she didn't want to find out. And then I wrote a story for a college class and my auntie shared it with the local paper, and the local small town paper put it in the editorial. And then this lady called 411 and found me and was telling me her story. Like, I didn't know what he was talking about. And then I read, you know, your story in the paper and the hair on the back of my neck stood up and I knew that that's Leona. And he drove me past her house and said that that's where Leona lived. And I was like, "Where was that?" And he said, "Right by the school off of Hall Street." And it was just right by the school. And that's where my mom lived. She was like one house away from the elementary school. And it's a small town, you know. She said, "I just knew, you know, all that time I knew I did whatever happened to Leona. When I read the article, I knew that's what he was talking about." I asked her what his name was. And she said his name was John, Mexican John. So she turned him in and was able to gather some evidence on him for poaching a deer on her property. I guess she was trying to fire him still and said that she couldn't afford to keep him on and buy food for her family. And there was a deer that used to come eat the apples in the apple tree in the front yard, and it was pregnant and it was out there one day and he killed it and drug it in and cut it open on the kitchen floor and said, "There you go. Now you can put some food in the freezer." And she was like, "This is what this guy's capable of. It scared the crap out of me. I knew whatever he did to Leona, I didn't want it to happen to me." And she's elderly, like she's older, like in her 70s, and has children. You know, he'd already raped and beaten the crap out of her granddaughter and stuff. And she turned a bunch of information into the police. He got arrested and was taken to prison for poaching. And the detective said that when they interviewed him in my mom's case while he was in prison, he would just smirk at him and tell him that he didn't know what they were talking about. That they knew if they could find her in any place, they could find my mom, they could pinpoint it down to him. But what I was told, and I don't know how true this is, but I was told that while they were in the process of getting a warrant and getting everything set up to polygraph him in prison, he was deported back to Mexico. And so now he's lost. They've lost him. And I always wondered, like, was somehow he being protected? I don't know. Like, I don't know. Nobody would ever tell me anything more than that. I did wonder about any charges that my mom had prior to disappearing. And, you know, if she was an informant for the police, did they go through and look at the people and kind of follow any trails there? Because I had somebody look it up for me once, and they did find that she had some pretty serious drug charges, and then shortly later they were just straight up dismissed. I don't have any record of it, but back in the 90s, I was in high school and I was mad at her, several charges of conspiracy to deliver, possession of methamphetamines, and she went to jail for 6 months and went to treatment on those, and that was in her history. And then there were some other charges that came up right before she disappeared, like within a couple of years of her disappearance. The person who looked them up for me said that these are pretty serious charges. And she used to work for like a drug trafficking task force. She said these are serious charges, and they were just dismissed. You know, I can't find anything else on them. They were just dismissed. And that's not necessarily, you know, not typically something that would happen with this heavy of a charge. You know, and I never even heard of those charges until she had disappeared and her friends were worried.
After Carolyn got this lead about John, another one came in.
A couple of years later, 2009, 2010, my mom's detective called me and it's all a blur. Like, I got off the phone with him and I called him back that night. And I was like, what'd you say? Can you repeat all of that? And that's still a blur. But my mom's detective called and he said that they got a tip from a woman that used to be married to John, and he had come around. She'd been kind of in hiding from him because he was pretty violent. She had said that John came around and was telling her what he did to Leona. And basically she kept saying, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about it, because if she knew too much, she was afraid he would hurt her too. But that they, whoever they is, I don't know, got rid of her. That was that. But her husband, this John, the same guy who worked for that lady as a ranch hand. And so we kind of know that this John dude had something to do with it. Too many people have come forward and said things that he said or that he did. But I get messages once in a while from people who say, I used to run with the drug crowd in LeGrand, and I was told that if you cooperate with the police in regards to the drugs, you'll end up in a bottomless hole on the top of Mount Emily like Leona. So people have been talking about it. It's just nobody's coming forward with where this hole is.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Looking at John's criminal history, it's extensive. He has several third-degree rape and sodomy charges where the victim was under 16. Additionally, over the years he was charged multiple times for harassment, assault, firearms violations, and several other offenses. Investigators spoke to John's ex-wife in 2009. John's ex-wife had a lot of information to give them. She said that she had an on-and-off relationship with John for about 7 years. And in that time, he had been both verbally and physically abusive to her, and told some members of her family that he would kill her if she didn't straighten up. After their relationship ended, John would periodically show up to borrow money from her, and she said that she would sometimes cook a meal for him. She told investigators that in 2003, before John went to the Oregon State Penitentiary, he came to her house to visit with her. The two sat outside and talked for a while. John began to tell her that he had done away with Leona, and his ex-wife said she didn't want to hear about it, and questioned why he was telling her this. He kept talking about it and said that he and another man had taken Leona behind a store and killed her. She explained that this was in the area of Minum State Park, about 35 miles from La Grande. John didn't tell his ex-wife how Leona was killed or if her body was concealed. She said he left that night and she never saw John again. John had gone to prison after this time, and before he was due to get out, she sold her home and moved to another state. She lived in fear of John and was planning to move yet again to another state due to her fear of him seeking her out. She said that initially, she didn't believe what John said was true because he had a history of telling lies or outlandish stories to impress or scare her. However, she had recently heard that he was a person of interest in Leona's case, and she began to second-guess her initial assumptions about what he had told her. This made her wonder about other things that had happened over the years, and if he could be responsible for other murders. She recalled a time when they were in California together. She and John were camping on a desert property her family owned. While they were there, John mentioned that a hole that was located on the property would be a good place to dispose of someone. Sometime later, after they had left California, John's ex-wife received a phone call from her cousin, who was concerned for her safety because they found a large amount of blood in the outhouse on the property. They also noticed a strong decaying smell from the hole that John had mentioned to her when they were camping. One interesting and strange detail her cousin mentioned was that there were several cucumber peels in the bloody outhouse. You're probably wondering why this is important. Well, John was known to eat cucumbers, and he would peel them with his pocket knife. The family members were worried that he had killed his then-wife, since he had threatened to in the past. Once they learned that she was okay, they covered the hole and tore down the outhouse without notifying authorities. Her family did this because they were terrified of John and what he might do if they turned him in. Throughout the course of their relationship, John had bragged to his ex-wife that he was part of the Mexican mafia and that killing was nothing. She described him as an evil man. He told her that she could never leave him, and if she tried, he would kill one of her kids so she would have to show up at the funeral, and he would find her that way. The investigator contacted John's ex-wife's cousin, who spoke to them about what they had seen in the outhouse. She recalled that she was camping on the property with other family members. She said that there was a lot of blood in the outhouse and it was fresh. She also noticed some freshly disturbed dirt about 3 feet from the outhouse, which she described to the investigator as a very obvious grave. The family members that were there discussed what to do, and some wanted to dig up what they believed to be a grave to see what was there, but others were too scared. They decided to tear down the outhouse and not to call the police because they were frightened. The detective took this information and passed it along to the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Office so that they could do their own investigation. We don't know if anything ever came from that tip, but the LeGrand detective didn't think it was connected to Leona's case due to the time frame. However, they did believe that it could be related to another missing persons case or unsolved murder. The investigators stated in their notes that if a homicide did in fact take place on the property during the time frame the family indicated, that John would be a person of interest because he had discussed disposing a body there and had been known to frequent the area around the time the family found the blood. At this point, it was 2009, a full decade after Leona had disappeared. The investigator tried to find where John was at this time. They found out that he had been in and out of jail and state prison in the early 2000s. By 2006, he was in jail again in Baker County, Oregon. And on May 23, 2006, John or Juan Peña Lamas was deported back to Mexico, making it nearly impossible for investigators in Oregon to track him down and question him further. After speaking to John's ex-wife, the investigator made plans to search the area near Minum State Park that John had mentioned to her. In November of 2009, search teams came out to the area of the state park with cadaver dogs. Within the first 20 minutes, one of the dogs alerted on an area. Then two other dogs alerted on the same spot. All three dogs later alerted on another spot as well. They excavated those locations but found no evidence of human remains. One handler told them that the dogs could have falsely alerted due to decaying timber on the ground. But for all three dogs to alert on the same spot was indicative of a positive alert on human remains. He also advised that canines could alert on a mole hole if a mole had taken a human bone into its hole, and each of the three sites had a mole hole. While they were searching this area, they noticed a pond that piqued their interest, but they didn't have the resources to search it at the time. They came back in 2018 to search the pond. The detectives wore waders and searched the pond with shovels, rakes, their hands, and feet, but didn't find any anomalies. They left that day confident that Leona's body was not in that pond. In the 21 years that have passed since Leona was last seen, tips have come in fairly consistently that point to John. The stories or rumors that have been circulating about John and what happened to Leona are awful. But as with so many other stories we have shared on the show, it's hard to tell if any of the stories could be true. Here's Crystal with more.
The story that John Pena told was that he took her out to, there's been stories that he took her to Troy and buried her in the woods. There's been stories that they took her to her favorite mushrooming spot, which I don't know where that is. They've taken her to Minum Pond. We've heard that she was up in Cove, Oregon, up High Valley Road in the canyon, that she'd been thrown off into the canyon. We've also heard that she's in the bottomless pit up on Mount Emily. I was told that she was in the Sammyville well, and that there's two abandoned wells, and she was in one of those wells, and I don't know if anybody ever searched that. I don't know what the outcome of any of those has been. I can't even find the bottomless pit. I hear it's up by the Indian, some kind of sun something gathering up there every year. And I heard it's somewhere up there, and it's just basically like a sinkhole, I guess, or something. And it's a hole, and you throw something down it, and you can't hear anything hit the bottom. Carolyn said that last I talked to her, she said that somebody was going to get a drone and see if they could get the drone down in there. It's kind of desolate. There's a, we call it Indian Rock. I don't know what the term is, but just from being here, everybody refers to it as Indian Rock, and it's basically just some metal sculptings of feathers and whatever, and it's up on this cliff. There's kind of like a lookout, and if you drive up there, which you can only get there certain times of the year because it is at the top of the mountain, basically if you come from La Grande and you head up to the top, you're basically between La Grande and Elgin. If you keep going down the road, it brings you down into Elgin, so you kind of go from La Grande over the mountain down to Elgin. So somewhere in that area is where the bottomless pit is, and everybody says that it's on top somewhere, but I can't find anybody that can actually pinpoint it. Lots of people have heard of it, but I can't find anybody who's actually told me that they've been there and they know where it's at and they could show me.
In an interesting twist, Leona's friend Nancy, who was the first person to alert everyone that something was wrong, and Leona had disappeared, Carolyn told us that she quickly faded out of sight, and that always made her wonder if she was scared or knew more.
My mom's friend Nancy, the one that called me, she made the first report. She had been friends since I was like in fifth or sixth grade. About 3 days after my mom disappeared, she was gone. She packed up and moved across the state, and I only heard from her like one or two times again after that, and that was it. Like, I never heard from her again. I couldn't find her. She was just gone. And, you know, she was my mom's best friend at the time. And so that always struck me as she knows more, you know, she knows more than she's letting on to completely move across the state. But the rumor was that my mom was an example of this is what happens when you work for the police. You know, this is what happens when you help the police. And I don't know if my mom's friend was involved in that at all and got scared and bailed, but she bailed. I found her son a couple months ago on Facebook. He shares a Facebook page with his wife, but apparently my mom's friend passed away several years ago, and don't bug me was what I got out of that. I'm his wife, and his mom is dead. Goodbye. And I always thought that for Nancy to move across the state like that, over there by her son, that even if she's gone, you know, and those secrets went with her, that she likely confided, you know, she likely told her son what she would never tell me or what she would never tell the cops.
Crystal told us about a lead that came in years after Leona went missing, that someone believed that they had seen her.
A few years later, someone in North Powder, Oregon, said they saw her and she brought mushrooms in, or she was up there mushrooming years after she went missing. So, I mean, people are still having sightings, which gives hope that, yeah, maybe she's just been living out in the woods in North Powder or somewhere out there. I mean, but that gives hope every time somebody says that's that they've seen her or whatever, then, you know, or gives a place to search or what they heard. And then you think you can go search that place. That's a whole bunch of hope that ends up getting crushed later. Kids need their moms even when they're adults. And Carolyn really, really would love to just see her one more time.
This possible sighting of Leona is mentioned in her file. A man told the police in 2008 that he had seen Leona at a store about 30 minutes from Le Grand. But by the time he reported it, it had been about 6 months since he believed he saw her. He had struck up a conversation with this woman about wild mushrooms, and we know that Leona was into mushroom picking. He asked her about identifying mushrooms, and she brought him out to her car to show him some different mushrooms that she had. They talked for several minutes about how she picks mushrooms and lives off of them. The woman told him that she lived in the woods by Anthony Lakes. The man didn't think anything of this friendly conversation he had with a woman about mushrooms, until months later when he saw Leona's missing persons flyer. He was shocked to see this woman had been missing for nearly a decade, because he was so sure that was Leona that he had spoken to. The investigator went to the store where this man believed he saw Leona and explained the situation to the owner. They said that they do get people who live in remote areas coming down from time to time to stock up on supplies, but no one recognized Leona as being a customer they remembered. They did agree to post her flyer, just in case that woman from the woods could possibly be her. In yet another strange twist, a woman came forward in 2017, stating that her mom had been friends with Leona, so she was around the same crowd of people that was around Leona. There was one person who was part of this crowd, Lisa Jo Chamberlain. Several years after Leona disappeared, Lisa Jo Chamberlain and her boyfriend were convicted of a brutal double murder in Mississippi. Lisa Jo Chamberlain is currently the only woman on death row in Mississippi. After learning about this heinous crime, the woman wondered if Lisa could have had something to do with what happened to Leona, since now she knew she was capable of murder. With just this little bit of information that someone who was later convicted of murder may have been in the same circle of people as Leona, it wasn't enough for investigators to look into it further.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. We were fortunate enough to talk to Lieutenant Jason Hayes from the LeGrand Police Department about Leona's case.
Well, my name is Jason Hayes. I'm a lieutenant with the LeGrand Police Department in LeGrand, Oregon. And I've been working for LeGrand for my entire police career, which is 21 and a half years. And in my career, I've kind of worked up through the ranks, spending most of my time in detective division, both narcotics and criminal detectives. And I became interested in law enforcement because my dad retired from the Oregon State Police. So that was kind of the segue and the nexus into my interest. I initially, after graduating high school, wanted to get into the medical field. And I was a hospital corpsman in the United States Navy for 4 years. And it was after I got out of the Navy that I realized that I had more of an interest in law enforcement. And that's when I started applying.
Lieutenant Hayes explained how their police department approaches missing persons cases.
We look at these missing persons in a very thorough and systematic way. It's not just what does one thing say about this person missing, but what does everything say about this person missing? And our policy in regards to adults is anyone can report somebody as missing to us. And once we've taken the information, then we'll start an initial investigation. Generally, that will be thorough interviews with everybody who knows her work. And then as it advances and we obtain more information, we'll send out attempt to locate listing the person as a missing person and endangered if we have that information to support that they're endangered as well. And eventually that'll go into our law enforcement data system and our National Crime Information Center. And then it can even go to the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System as well. As the investigation progresses and if the person is not located, we also will obtain DNA if we can and if it's available, get dental records, have those logged in case the person's found somewhere else and to help with identifying that person. And then we will assign it to multiple investigators to look into the case and to continue that investigation and follow up on whatever leads that come. LeGrand is a small community of 12,000 people. It has a small university here, Eastern Oregon University. And it's nestled at the base of the Blue Mountains, so it's actually very beautiful. We have four distinct seasons, a distinct spring, summer, fall, and winter. And it's a recreation area for hikers, mountain bikers, and skiers, and very good hunting and fishing as well. And so having said that, our geography around us is thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of forested land and mountains, which are both mostly public access. When we have missing people who have been missing from somewhere else, maybe it's a missing hunter, we usually find them in the forest somewhere. And they're usually located, morel mushrooms is a big thing in our spring. So we have a lot of people in the woods hiking throughout the woods in the spring looking for morel mushrooms. And then we have a large hunting population that are in the woods constantly during the late summer and fall and going into early winter. So that's probably where most, when we do have, which is not very often. And then sometimes depending if our missing person was suicidal and we find them where they've driven into a ravine or somewhere remote, off a cliff or something in their vehicle. And obviously those are very challenging for us, but we, you know, we have resources to utilize drones and aircraft and search parties to help. It's just because of the size of our geography. That's what's hard, especially when you don't have a jump off spot, a spot where to start, then it's very difficult.
Lieutenant Hayes told us about what they uncovered during the early days of the investigation into Leona's disappearance.
We first became aware when one of Leona Kinsey's friends by the name of Nancy talked to one of our detectives and wanted to report Leona is missing. And that was on October 28th of 1999. On the initial report, when her friend Nancy came to report her as missing, she was representing that her and her friends were making this report. And basically what it was Leona had been missing for a couple of days. The last time she was seen was around October 25th. And they were suspicious because she had two dogs and a cat, and they seemed to be neglected, which would be out of the ordinary for Leona. She loved her pets and took care of them. So if she was going to go on an extended absence somewhere, she would have notified somebody to help take care of her pets and things would be taken care of, which was not the case initially in this. The last date she was seen by a friend, and that was at Walmart on the 25th. The car was found the 29th of October in 1999, and it was also found by her friend Nancy, and it was located at the Albertsons parking lot. Albertson no longer exists there now, but at the time, later on, we received information that that is where she went to do certain illicit transactions. It was very suspicious, and we did put Nancy on polygraph, and she passed. And so she became probably our best witness for information, the most reliable information that we received on the initial investigation.
There have been many theories about what happened to Leona, or who may have harmed her, but one person stands out to Lieutenant Hayes.
I was not part of the initial investigation. I didn't get involved in this until 2018. However, when I go back and review the report, based on the information that we received, the initial attempt to locate and entries were missing endangered. And that was primarily due, my interpretation of looking at it is because Leona was heavily involved, according to her friends and witnesses that we talked to, heavily involved in illicit drug use and delivery. And the motive that people gave us, if they had one, for somebody harming her or doing something with her to cause her to disappear was a result of either debt owed or something to do around the drug culture. And I want to make it clear that we don't have tunnel vision in this case and just want to, you know, narrow down to one particular theory. But all the information that we have, which is not a lot, her disappearance was a true vanishing with not a lot of evidentiary support to track us one way or the other. So anything is possible. But however, saying that, my theory is in reviewing this case and what involvement I have, is definitely foul play was at play here. I will tell you this. I have a person of interest, and it is what information we've gathered throughout this investigation would be Leona's drug dealer, who she bought her supply from. Because they would meet at, according to the witnesses and her friends that talked to the police in the initial investigations, was that Leona would buy her drugs from a person named Juan. He goes by other aliases as well. And that those drug deals would happen at Albertson's parking lot, ironically, where her car was located. So to me, you know, looking at all the information, I definitely am interested in him. Unfortunately, he was interviewed initially. He was cooperative. However, he denied having any knowledge of Leona's whereabouts, but we know that he wasn't truthful in some of his statements about when the last time he saw her was. And then he was arrested on other charges that had nothing to do with this case. And then he was deported to Mexico, and that was in the early 2000s. And he's been off the radar ever since.
Lieutenant Hayes told us that his department is dedicated to solving this case, and they are willing to check out any and all leads that anyone may throw their way.
Well, you know, one of the biggest advocates for this case has been Leona's daughter, Carolyn. And she has been putting forth a big effort into making the community, not just here in LeGrand, but statewide and now nationally, aware of her mom's case. And her hope is the same as our hope. And that hope is that somebody has information that will lead to us solving this case, whatever happened with Leona. And so we will continue to follow up on leads when we get them. You know, over the course of the last 20 years, we've had 9 detectives look at this case with fresh eyes. One of those was a specific cold case detective that worked on a voluntary basis for us. We've implemented cadaver dogs, search and rescue. Psychics have provided information in this, and in one case, a monk provided information to Carolyn. We followed up on every one of those leads. Yes, Carolyn talked to us early on in the investigation, said that a monk had a vision, shared with her a location near LeGrand where Leona was. We sent out a search party. We looked in that area, but of course, it wasn't a specific search area, very broad, but that ended up to be unfounded. So every lead that has been put out or Carolyn has received, she's given to us. We've looked into it. We will continue to do that. This case is just very difficult because there's just not a lot of information that leads us in one direction. However, I have not lost hope. And even though I'm a lieutenant, I will continue to encourage our detectives to follow up on the leads where they are and continue those fresh eyes to look at this case and see if there's something that we're missing. I'm not naive. I don't know if we did everything absolutely perfect in 1999 with this investigation. I think hindsight's always 20/20, but I don't think there's any information that I've seen that we're missing something that would have solved this case much sooner.
Carolyn told us that over the years, every time that human remains have been recovered anywhere near where Leona disappeared, she gets her hopes up that it might just be the big break that she's been waiting for.
Remains are found and I've like waited for updates. Or I'd call the detective and he'd be like, we're looking into her, Carolyn, but nothing, you know, nothing right now leads us to believe that's her. And last spring, human remains were found outside of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, which is just 45 minutes from where my mom lived. And they couldn't be identified right away. And they were testing to see if they were ancient. And so that was like, oh, my gosh, these are old. They could be, you know, they could be her. I don't know how ancient, you know, how ancient is, but they're not fresh. I called to talk to law enforcement at that time. And so the detective there was like, can you describe her? And so I'm describing her. Yeah, she was like 5'2", and she was about 100 pounds, and she had long brown hair, and she had a tattoo on her shoulder. And I just stopped and realized I can't describe her human body because these are just a pile of bones, you know, like what would her bones look like, you know? And I was like, she was 5'2", she was small, she broke her jaw when she was 19, she broke both of her hands all the freaking time. You know, she was always breaking her wrists and her thumbs, you know, broken arms. She broke her femur in the 80s. She, you know, like I was trying to describe her skeleton and I don't know, like I just had flashbacks of trying to call her in missing and trying to describe her. And now I'm trying to describe what's left of her.
Crystal remains hopeful that if they keep putting Leona's story out there, that someone will come forward and tell them what they know.
I hope something comes of it. She just needs some answers. Just even a tidbit, I think, would suffice her just for a while. But I think she just needs something, needs some kind of closure, some kind of answer. You know, was there a fight? Was she an informant? Because then you could kind of understand, okay. Right now, all we have is speculation and guessing. We're just guessing everything.
Carolyn believes that more could have been done to solve her mom's case over the years. And she told us why she believes Leona's case didn't garner much attention.
You know, when it comes to like the MMIW and the missing and murdered Native Americans, I've kept my mom's story alive in that platform a lot. But people always ask, you know, do you think that this was something racial, or, you know, do you think your mom was discriminated against because it was racial? And I've always said no, that I don't think that that was the case in my mom's situation. I think it was her lifestyle, you know, that she didn't hold status in the community. She was kind of a pest as far as law enforcement is concerned, you know, and she wasn't a thief or, you know, assaulting folks or that kind of thing. She was just involved in the drug scene there. But I don't think that they investigated because they didn't know how, that she didn't hold any status to shine a spotlight on.
Today, Carolyn continues to advocate for her mother, but also for the entire community of missing and murdered Indigenous people.
My name is Carolyn DeFord. I'm Puyallup and Nisqually. I'm currently in the Tacoma area. Thank you for hearing us today and taking the time to listen to House Bill 2951 this morning. I'm here as family of women who have been missing and gone murdered, and as an advocate for families of missing and murdered Indigenous people. I'm here to be a voice for those people who can no longer be here. This issue is really close to my heart. My mother, Leona Kinsey, went missing October 25th, 1999. She went to the store, and she was scheduled to meet a friend immediately after, and when she didn't show up to meet her friend, we knew something was wrong. She falls under so many of the risk factors that cause our women to go missing. She's a survivor of domestic violence. She was involved in substance abuse. She had a history in that community where I feel that the police department in that area kind of victim-blamed her. You know, we see that in the news all the time. And justified that that's why she's missing and it wasn't a priority to find her. My cousin, Lenore Davis, was murdered in June 2002. She responded to a request from one of her dear friends to escape. She needed help escaping domestic violence. When she arrived to the place to help her friend leave, she was shot in the back and killed. The impact that this has on our families, it perpetuates the historical trauma that our communities are already dealing with. You think about our families who have children who grow up having lost their mothers, young children. They grow up knowing what happened and using their imaginations when they don't know what happened. And I guarantee there's not any more brutal stories than you can think of what happened to somebody than what goes through your imagination when you try and wonder and you watch a horror story.
So what happened to Leona Kinsey on October 25th, 1999? In the aftermath of her disappearance, several people emerged as potential persons of interest, including her on-again, off-again boyfriend, Lonnie, a man she had a dispute with over a car, and her dealer John or Juan Peña Lamas. People within Leona's inner circle began pointing fingers at one another. It seems as though, at this point, John or Juan is who law enforcement believes is likely responsible. Since he was deported to Mexico in 2006, they can't just bring him in and question him again. They do have many witness statements from others who had been told things by John, but nothing ever led them to finding Leona. It seemed as though some people within the local community were scared at the time, worried that harm may come to them if they spoke up. But John is no longer there. If someone does know something, now would be the perfect time to come forward. Carolyn told us that she will continue on with her mission of finding answers. She's determined to never give up. If you have any information about the disappearance of Leona Kinsey, please call the LeGrand Police Department at 541-963-1017. You can follow developments in Leona's case on Facebook at Find Leona Kinsey.
It's just a huge mystery that's very unsettling, and she's not the only one missing from here. I don't know, about 4 years ago or so, they did an article in the paper, and it had like the, I want to say 10 women or 10 people that are missing from around this Union County. It's been so long that it's easy just to like not think about it anymore. What brings it to mind is when you drive by the billboard or when you see Lonnie at his house or in his truck.
I've never felt that my mom would come home. I had a dream once that she did. And sometimes I have dreams that I know are visits, that they're 100% a spiritual dream. And then I have some that are just dreams. And I had this dream that she came home once, and I was standing in front of like an old country store. And she was like, "Hey, you know, what are you doing here?" And I'm like, "What are you doing here?" And she's like, "Well, I was on my way to see you." And I was like, "You were on your way to see me, huh?" And she's like, "Yeah, I'm back, and And I just had to take some time away, and I'm back. And I was talking to my auntie and telling my cousin about this dream. And my cousin said, well, sweetie, maybe you just need to process this anger that you have at her for leaving you, for being in this lifestyle, you know. It's normal to be mad about that.
I dream of Leona every so often, and I think of her often because she's been tied up in my life for so long. She's one of the few people I've known since childhood. That it really bums me out when I think something bad happened to her, because she really was good people. And she just chose a bad life, but she really was good people.
That brings us to the end of episode 275. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from North Carolina. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.